and China for naval military exercises. South Africa has a long history with Russia and a troubled one with the United States. How does this history shape the alignments of the country today, if at all?
Well, I think it is important to know. The other day I heard also the vice minister or the minister, I'm not sure, of Uganda saying similar things about Europe. And when they were under colonial rule, it was the Soviet Union that helped them, not other countries. But now we have a different situation. And I think we have to look for a peaceful world, a multipolar world, in which the rules of the United Nations will be followed. I mean, I, for one, am very much in defense. Of course, we need also a reform of the United Nations. That's very important. But we want the Charter of the United Nations and international law to be respected. So that means that we cannot condone with the invasion of Russia, whatever the motives they have. That's another question. But you have to seek your objectives in a peaceful way, in a way that privileges dialogue, privileges conversation.
We have 5 seconds.
Sorry?
We have 5 seconds. So Amarim, I want to thank you for being with us. We're also going to have an interview with you in Spanish and post it on our Spanish website at democracynow.org. Celso Amarim, foreign affairs advisor to Brazil's President Lula. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2. This February and March, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our talented programmers, including specials like Black History and Future series. If you'd like to help KBOO reach our $17,000 goal by March 25th, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321 right now. We thank you and you're welcome.
Hello, my name is Jeff, and I am the host of the KBOO show, A Matter of Public Records. Mark E. Smith, singer and driving force of the band The Fall, was born on March 5, 1957, and I have put together a special show to celebrate. It will feature music by The Fall, some spoken word pieces by Mark E. Smith, music that influenced The Fall, and bands that were inspired by The Fall. You can hear the show on March 6th, starting at midnight, exclusively on KBOO, as part of our All Thrills, No Frills Winter Membership Drive. Please consider making a donation today. Thank you. KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Tuesday. It's time for Too Much Information with your hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. Stay tuned.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. We're so pleased you could join us this morning. My name is Abe Proctor, and joining me, as she does each and every week, Tracy Simmons. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
We trust that you are all safe and sound after enduring Oregon's annual snowy freakout. This year was kind of fun. I also want to remind you of a couple of things. The phone number to call to take part in today's conversation, 503-231-8187. That's the phone number. The other piece of information, you just heard about it. We are in the midst of a spring fundraising drive here at KBOO, and you can make a contribution to the radio station that keeps you connected with your community by visiting www.kboo.fm and click the donate button. It's just that easy. Tracy, what's new in your life these days?
Well, since digging out of the snow and being in a little hibernation mode, I've been paying attention to kind of what's going on in the state. What are we looking at? I've been thinking about filing my taxes. It is that time of year where I'm like, ooh, maybe I could schedule a spring break getaway, but I need a little extra cash in my pocket, and a tax refund would be nice. So I've been kind of gathering up all the paperwork for that in my time in my house, hiding out because of the snow and icy weather. And I'm guessing probably a lot of people are like, maybe I'll do something since I'm just sitting here. But that's one of the things that came up on my radar. And so I started looking into, kind of seeing the statewide budget outlook. Am I getting a kicker this year? Not? Maybe I should file now. And ran across a good article that we're going to talk about today from OPB about the state economic forecast and the kicker itself. And so we're going to pose some questions to you listeners. But just, you know, Abe shared the number to call. And I guess the question for listeners as we start this conversation is, would you give up your kicker? And if you would give it up, what would you give it up for? What would you want that money to go towards as far as, helping the rest of the state? And then if you weren't willing to give it up, you know, why? Why? I know a lot of folks definitely rely on their tax refunds for, you know, repairs, for house repairs, for car repairs, for just every day, you know, covering the cost of all of these things that continue to raise in cost based on inflationary realities. And so that's the question. Would you give up the kicker? Is it a stupid law? That we even get a kicker. If you were to give it up, would you spend it on? And if not, what are you holding on to it for? So that's the question, and we'll jump into the conversation, Abe and I.
Well, let's take a quick step back here and establish a little context. What exactly is a kicker, and why are we discussing it outside the context of a sporting event?
Oh, Abe, you jokester. So, yeah, the state of Oregon many years ago put in a kicker law, and it's, you know, been built into the state. It's pretty much, you know, a nice-to-have kind of thing. And basically that, you know, Oregon is basically a state that has a biennial budget. Within that biennial budget, prior to the budget being set, we use a predictive kind of analytics to see, like, how much money is the state coming in, how much revenue is coming into the state. And there is this interesting sweet spot that basically if the revenue is within this 2% sweet spot of what's coming into the state, some of that money goes back to the taxpayers when they file their taxes in the state. And so that kicker has been triggered, I think, at least, you know, five times in the last five biennium. It is a way for people to put a little more money in their pocket. I think it's, once again, nice to have. When, you know, we know that there is a tax burden in the state because we don't have a sales tax. People who pay income tax and people who pay property taxes kind of bear the burden of the state's taxation structure. And so those folks are the ones who typically benefit from getting some money back within that kicker. The law itself has been questioned for a long time. Of course, we, you know, survived the 2008 recession. There's been a predicted recession on the horizon in the whole country for quite some time since COVID. And so thinking about, you know, what is the state's reserves? How do we fund basic, you know, human needs like housing, education, like all of that has always been a challenge in the state of Oregon. And so folks like me are like, I don't know that we need a state to be giving back money to the taxpayers when we should be. Right, investing that money in a social safety net, in our education system that is ranked very low in the nation as far as investments that we make. Of course, higher education is super important to me. So just thinking about the structural reasons why we have this law, what it actually does, who it benefits, who it might burden, and how we could like even really think about it in a conceptually different way. I don't know if I did it justice, but...
I think you did, yeah.
Okay.
This, we should note that this conversation taps into currents that run deep in the American body politic, particularly around the subject of taxes. Now, I'm going to paint with a very broad brush here, so brace yourself. Broadly speaking, I think we can agree that in the United States, people of a leftward bent, liberals, progressives, whatever you want to call them, are more favorably inclined to the notions of, first of all, paying taxes, and secondly, the notion of the government using those taxes to better the lives of their fellow citizens. This is based on a worldview, and crazy, I know, that this is what governments do. They levy taxes, they raise revenue, they spend the money on behalf of the people. So inherent in this more favorable view towards taxation among liberals is the fact that you know, we believe that this is why we institute governments. This is their job. This is how we improve the lot of the most vulnerable among us, and hopefully everybody's lot while we're at it. On the other side of this equation is the very deep, very reflexive anti-tax position that conservatives embrace in this country. This is almost to a pathological extent. Conservatives hate paying taxes. Let me put an asterisk on that. Conservatives hate paying taxes when the revenue raised by those taxes is spent on the wrong people. And I will leave it to you to deduce what I mean by the wrong people. However, if the revenue raised through taxes is used to, you know, build aircraft carriers and cruise missiles and fancy fighter planes, conservatives generally seem to be okay with that. So that's the dichotomy around taxes in this country. And it is almost guaranteed to give you an irrational conversation whenever you enter into it with somebody. And we should add also that this irrational stew around taxation is exacerbated here in Oregon by the fact that we continue to do things in very antiquated, clunky sort of ways, starting with the fact that our legislature meets only every other year. Again, here's another asterisk. Originally, our legislature met only every other year in odd numbered years for a maximum of 160 days every odd numbered year. Now, in 2010, the voters approved annual legislative sessions, but listen to this. During even numbered years, the legislative session, which despite the fact that it's now annual, is called the special session, can be a maximum of 35 days. So you have 35 days in even numbered years to do the business of the entire state of Oregon, and 160 days during odd-numbered years to do the business of the entire state of Oregon. Now, any rational person would look at this from a distance and say, that's really dumb. Just meet every year for as long as you need to meet, to as long as necessary to take care of the state's business. That would seem to be a more rational way to do things. But that is not how we do things here. And out of that, as Tracy mentioned a few minutes ago, comes this incredibly awkward situation where instead of having a yearly accounting of revenues where we know, where the legislature knows from year to year exactly how much money they have to work with, we have to rely on these budgetary forecasts that Tracy talked about. And we have to sort of guess where things are going to fall out. And if we guess wrong and the revenue that comes in exceeds the projected number by more than 2%, then we get the kicker. Silly, silly, silly. But as Tracy alluded, despite the fact that progressives generally are okay with paying taxes, it's still really nice. It's still really nice when a little bit comes back your way, isn't it?
I mean, I think it feels nice, right? I mean,
yeah,
it feels nice to get the money back that you paid and that you didn't expect to necessarily get back. I think what's interesting about even the kicker itself is it's, you know, it's kind of smoke and mirrors. That's your money anyway. If we're being real, right, you already paid because you worked and people took your money right off the top before you ever got it. If you paid taxes on a home or a property, right, that money got taken off the top. So you're literally getting your own money back. And I guess the question for me is, would I rather have the money back, or would I rather make sure that we could fully fund public education, right? Would I rather have the money back, or hopefully, you know, invest, or, you know, contribute to statewide investments in housing for the unhoused, or affordable housing for people who need it, right? Like, I don't know. I just continue to wonder where are our priorities. And I know for folks who are potentially struggling, right, getting the money back is going to be way more important than putting faith in a system that has probably failed a lot of people, right? It's dicey.
It is dicey. And like I said, this is a difficult subject on which to hold a rational conversation, because people's feelings on this stuff run deep. I mean, you can make a perfectly reasonable argument that if the state took in more money than it expected to take, and it budgeted itself based on that expected number, then yeah, that extra money should absolutely go back to the taxpayers. It absolutely should. You can make that argument. But as you say, Tracy, at the same time, it's really easy to look around here in Oregon and see all kinds of good ways that money could be put to use. Like you said, shoring up the public education system, addressing the systemic houselessness epidemic that is all over the place. There are many, many things that we could do with that money besides giving it back to people. But at the same time, it's nice to get a little extra money in your pocket when you're not expecting it. So this is sort of a sticky wicket, and we're really interested to hear what listeners have to say about it.
So let's talk the numbers. And of course, if we have callers, let me know. But last year, the kicker was triggered, and it said it was about $3 billion. Let me just double check. Yeah, so in May of 2022, the state predicted that the kicker would be $3 billion back to the Oregon taxpayers. This year, we're looking at about $4 billion. So what do we know from that? Well, we know that the revenues from businesses, from taxpayers who are property owners and income earners, continues to rise. And so who is contributing to that? Well, likely high-income earners, because the property taxes, you know, are keeping not steady. They're rising, but definitely not contributing to that. So the state is basically saying that high-income earners and businesses are the ones contributing to that huge increase in revenue. But $4 billion is not nothing to sneeze at, right? When we're talking about infrastructure, we're talking about even roads and things like that, right? $4 billion is a lot of money for the state to be potentially investing back into the state and into all of its residents. The total amount of money that's going to the legislature is almost $700 million to spend in the coming years. Like, that's a huge amount of money, right? And once again, right, when we look at things like what we actually spend money on, that's, we could make some serious investments and improvements. And I think this is where we get into the conversation of, you know, what progressives want, what liberals want, and what conservatives want, because these are all three very different things. And I think we end up spending money based on the priorities of the people in the legislature. And that is, for me, a little bit scary. I think there is, you know, an ongoing tug of war and conversation about the viability of a kicker. And even looking at the, you know, kind of far down the road economic forecast of the state, there's, you know, forecasts for, population decline in the state of Oregon. Not enough people moving to the state, not enough babies being had, not enough, people, dying at a rate that is faster than the, ability to produce a workforce. And so we know that the kind of long-term outlook for the state might require having a revenue padding. And so that's also something to take into account.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm really curious to hear what our listeners have to say on this question. Let me ask you, Tracy, what is your position on the kicker? Would you rather have that money in your pocket, or would you rather see the state you put it to some other use?
And this is the hard thing, right? Because if I trusted that the state would, you know, truly design systems of support for the people in most need of those systems, I would feel very comfortable not having a kicker, right? The question is, what does the state end up spending my money on? If they're spending it on more policing, if they're spending it on, you know, systems of defense, if they're spending it on, you know, things that, you know, tax cuts for very rich people, or, you know, money back to corporations, right? I would absolutely rather have the money myself. Yet, right, if I knew that the state was going to do the right thing and invest in and create opportunities for building affordable and no-cost housing to houseless people, right? If I knew that the money was going to make sure that everybody in every community had access to healthy food and clean water, right, I would be supportive of that. If I knew that the state was going to fund behavioral and mental health care for people who need it and don't have access, right, I just feel like my priorities would, I would feel comfortable giving up the kicker if I knew that the people at the policymaking table were aligned with me in a progressive way to support the kinds of things that I feel like we need to be creating in this state, especially with the future outlook on the economy. It's going to get really bleak for the people in most need of support and resources into the future. And so I think we should be investing that money now. But yet, just like many other progressives, I don't trust that the system would do what I want it to do. So it's a double-edged sword.
Well, let me follow up on that then. And note that our new governor, Tina Kotek, has put the houselessness crisis front and center on her list of priorities. She signed three executive orders. The first has established a statewide housing production goal of 36,000 new units per year. That's up from 22,000 or roughly that Oregon builders create now. To declare a houselessness state of emergency in those parts of Oregon that have seen an increase in unsheltered homelessness of 50% or more from the period 2017 to 2022. That includes virtually every major urban center in the state. Portland, the Bend-Redmond area, Eugene and Springfield, Medford, Ashland, and Salem, all of them have seen their number of unsheltered houseless grow by more than 50% during that time. That is a staggering, staggering statistic. And it sounds, Tracy, like the governor, along with her Democratic supermajority, is ready to take some action on this issue. So knowing that, would you hand over your kicker or would you keep it?
Once again, right, the caveat is, what's the actual plan? Right, because saying a thing, and, you know, we had this conversation on this very program about this, you know, the city of Portland and the mayor taking $27 million to build basically Hoovervilles, shanty towns for houseless people and concentrate them in a state of poverty, trauma, and likely instability, right? So I don't know what the plan is, but if I knew what the plan was, and the plan looked like, you know, building things and making sure that there was, you know, cost control for those properties and having no income and low income housing, affordable housing, right? I would be supportive of that. Absolutely.
Engineer Sonia notes that the most, quote, lack, unquote, in public resources is actually misuse, especially regarding the unhoused. There's plenty of what unhoused people need. The issue is that it's actively kept away from them. That is a very good point, and one that won't necessarily be addressed by a larger commitment towards building shelter from the state. However, it seems to me that if these housing units are made available, are constructed and made available to people, then that those are places where people can stay. And I think it would be more difficult more difficult for those resources to be withheld from the houseless, as Engineer Sonia suggests, if there were suddenly a glut of brand new housing units earmarked for those who are now unsheltered. So, yeah, it's a thorny issue. But for me, Tracy, I think I'd come down on the side of keep the kicker, build more homes for those people who need them.
Yeah.
But that's just me. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Tell us up and tell us how you feel about this. Would you rather have that money in your pocket? If nobody ever objects to getting a little more money in their pocket, there's no doubt about it. Let us know. Or would you rather have that money spent for some other reason? And if so, what is that reason? What would you like to see that money do? The extra money that's kicking around the state of Oregon. As I just noted, I would vote to have the state keep that money and use it to house people who have no housing. I think that's, if not the most pressing issue facing the populace right now, it's certainly near the very top. But as for the act of paying taxes itself, yeah, I'll cop to the fact that it's nice to get the money back. You know, I don't, you know, I sit down to pay my taxes. I just did this past weekend, so submitted my tax return. And it was nice. It was nice to see at the end that I would get a little bit of money coming back my way. I do not deny that that is a pleasant occurrence when it happens. So here we are, back at that strange space of irrational tension, Tracy, where we discuss taxes in the United States of America.
So what do you usually spend your tax refund on, if I can be so nosy?
Yeah, you can be so nosy. There's been, over the years, it's varied. Sometimes we've used it to, you know, make needed repairs or improvements to the house. Sometimes we've used it to, you know, go take a trip to the beach for a few days. It depends, I guess, on what the need or the want is at the moment. But in every case, I don't deny that it's been really nice to have that flexibility, to have the ability to make that decision. That's nice. How about you?
Yeah, same. I mean, I've done projects in the house. At one point, we redid some windows and got cash back the next year, right? Once again, right, what I'm going to say might be provocative because I am not rich by any measure. But I think there's a benefit, of course, to, you know, middle to high income earners. And if you are a person like me who previously was taxed at a very ridiculous rate for making the kind of money that I made, I literally needed that money to be able to, you know, get my car fixed or, you know, be able to feed myself or pay rent or pay back rent. Like,
right.
I think it's quite interesting, you know, at this point in my life, I'm able to do more fun stuff, right? Oh, let me get myself a new Gucci purse. Okay, never mind. It's, you know, it's pretty cold here. Let's, you know, head out to Orlando, right? Like, we've done that kind of thing. And so, once again, right, I'm giving up way too much of my own information, but I, at this point, would want that money to go to a much better cause than my own self-indulgence or my own ability to take another vacation. There are people who literally cannot take, will not take, have never taken a vacation, right? And I recognize that, and I recognize the privilege in what I'm saying right now. And I would definitely want the state to be solvent into the future as well. So what does it look like to build up a reserve for, you know, a rainy day fund for the state? We've had some pretty terrible weather tragedies in the state as far as, you know, whether that's fires, whether that's, you know, snow in the middle of you know, February, end of February, almost March. We've had, you know, any number of things that we could be, you know, saving money for a rainy day for, and also funding projects of social support.
Engineer Sonia notes, that's too much information, Tracy.
The name of the
No, I'm glad you mentioned this, because this whole conversation around taxation and you know, what do you do with your return and all this, is this conversation changes dramatically based on whether or not you own a home. It's absolutely the case. And it's also absolutely the case that here in Oregon and around the United States, the younger generation now, millennials and younger, are looking at an economic reality that says you are probably not going to become a homeowner until much later in your life than preceding generations did. And that is an incredibly daunting reality for younger people to face. So, yeah, it's one thing for you and I as homeowners to talk about this in the way that we do, but the reality for many, many other people is drastically different. So we might be talking about a situation where, yeah, somebody might be a young progressive and all about the government using its revenue on behalf of the people, but at the same time would really, really like to have that kicker money back in their pocket because they really need it. So it is a thorny question. And regardless of what people tell us today on the telephone, we should not judge them. We should say you are in your set of circumstances, living your life, and this is where you're at. We're just more than anything curious about what people think. So that said, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's go to Terry. Terry, good morning. Are you there?
Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I am for the kicker going back to the people because, in my opinion, everything that you said with regard to it being helpful for the individual and whatnot is certainly in place. But in addition to that, for those of us that have the ability and means to do more with it, we can direct it toward the funding of additional organizations that we feel in support of rather than trusting what Tracy was saying, basically, about how it is that sometimes things get used inefficiently. And when we don't know, all of us that are listening now, when we don't know what to do with that kicker, I don't think that there's a problem at KBOO for us to donate directly to KBOO. It just seems like it's pretty clear and very efficient.
That's right. Send your kicker to KBOO. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, Terry.
Well, thanks very much.
Terry, are you still there?
I am.
Thanks. You have a great day, too. 503-231-8187. What do you think about, Tracy, about that? Do you think that money, if you're a progressive, are things better off if you take that kicker money and you donate it to some place that you know is going to have a measurable impact on the community around you? Is that a better choice for a progressive than to leave that money in the hands of the state legislature?
I mean, I'll say it like this, and I've said this before. You know, I feel like philanthropy can be a really great thing. I absolutely donate to organizations that I know and trust are going to make sure that the people I want to be serving and want to be making sure get a benefit from my donations are going to get that, whether that's Street Roots, whether that's the Oregon Food Bank, whether that's SNOCAP, like whether that's educational organizations that I know is going to do what I want with the money that I'm giving. So I love philanthropy in that way. I also recognize that we have ceded responsibility for our communities by relying very heavily on, you know, philanthropic efforts, right? And I also know that certain philanthropy type organizations are a way that very rich people can launder their own money and launder their own reputations. And so also a slippery slope for me. But I absolutely agree, right? If you are, you know, very much invested in, you know, the success of an organization that you know is supporting individuals, communities, and, you know, entities that you would like your money to go to, right? You know it's going to go there if you give it to them. I think the question remains, right? What is the plan for the state? What does that plan look like? I need the details, right? So I know that if I'm, you know, foregoing my kicker and giving it back to the state, that it's going to actually support the causes that I want to support. But yes, philanthropy, you know, has its very bright spots and it has its ways of, you know, we know the whole story of, you know, certain organizations, whether we're talking about the Trump Organization and, you know, stealing from veterans or, you know, Brett Favre stealing from the people of Alabama, right? We know that in some cases, philanthropy actually is not the best way to serve, you know, a needy populace. And In those examples, right, I would avoid those kind of organizations and filter money into, you know, organizations like KBOO that provide the opportunity for us to come on air and give our unfiltered opinions, because we are not beholden to corporate interests to tell you what they want. You know, we're giving our own opinions here. And so, yeah, community radio, you know, organizations that serve the people you want to serve the most are always a good way to reinvest your money in the social safety net and in the kind of community you want to build.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would add that at the upper levels of income in this country, the very, very rich, oftentimes I think philanthropy and charitable giving are used to whitewash a person's reputation and also allow them to perhaps, I was about to say salve a conscience, but I don't think billionaires necessarily have that problem. It's used, charitable giving is used as a means to dodge the deeper responsibility, which is to pay the taxes that you freaking owe, so that people around the country on a macro level can receive, communities can receive the sorts of investments that they really need. So yes, yeah, philanthropy can be a wonderful thing, but also the mechanism of governments raising revenue through taxes and then spending that money to better the lives of people, I think that's an indispensable component of life in a representative democracy. And there it is. 503-231-8187. So let me ask you another follow-up question, Tracy.
Yeah.
You've established your position on whether or not you keep the kicker. So let's pretend for a moment that there will be no kicker, that all of that money is going back to the state. What then would you like to see the state do with that money?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're on the same page. It has to be, you know, addressing and not with, you know, Band-Aids and, you know, duct tape, but really addressing the root causes of the houseless situation in the state. We have, you know, for way too long left, you know, a basic human need to the market to decide how much it costs. I very much wonder if, you know, my own family and children and people in my communities will be housed into the next 10 years. When we see property taxes rising, when we see the cost of housing rise in such a way, you have to make in the state of Oregon to buy, I'm not the state of Oregon, but in the city of Portland, Multnomah County area, I think the number came out, it was like $145,000 per year to be able to afford an average costing home, right? The average cost is over $500,000. That's not sustainable. Right. And so when I think about just the future looks pretty bleak unless we get a hold on this. And we've allowed the free market to decide for way too long.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want Band-Aids and, you know, duct tape. I want real solutions, long term and future forward solutions to what is a housing crisis that will become, you know, a full community crisis, if not already. Right. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. Something needs to be done. Something needs to be done here in Portland and in municipalities around the state, but particularly here in Portland, where we are forced to watch this ongoing theater of the houseless, which is about two-thirds drama and one-third farce, in which people are cleared out of camps and swept up and moved to some other part of the city where they sit until they are swept up and moved to some other part of the city. With people all the while claiming that, no, we don't want them in our part of the city. It's dehumanizing. It is a glaring systemic problem with allowing, as you said, Tracy, and I'm really glad you noted that, letting the free market set the price of housing in Portland and other municipalities around the state. Enough already. Clearly, the market has failed to deliver a solution that actually puts people in shelter, that actually gives them that bedrock component of mitigating the human condition. Food, clothing, shelter, right? If the market is failing on those counts, then clearly somebody needs to step in and take over for the market. So I'm glad that the governor has made this a priority. And I'm glad that it appears the state is going to have well, I'm one of, I was about to say sufficient funds to address the problem, but at least something to work with.
Yeah, the other thing I would definitely want to see is a real pipeline for people to be able to do mental and behavioral health. So in the education sector, funding healthcare workers, mental health professionals, behavioral health professionals, social workers, all of those people are doing the work of angels, and they get underpaid for it, and they often have a lot of student loan debt burden. Why, as a state, do we not tie there's a direct connection between, houselessness and mental health and behavioral health? If we're going to solve the problem, we can't just solve part of the problem, right? We have to look at those root causes and build solutions for all of the root causes, because they're all connected, right? And so I also think about the need in the state for access to free mental health support, free behavioral health support. I've shared, I'm very candid about it, but I've been to rehab, and it's incredibly expensive. Incredibly expensive to be able to go. And so we know if you want to get yourself in a better mental state, a better behavioral state, and you need those resources, they have to be free. We have to be able to figure out how to fund that, how to make sure that the people who are doing that work are getting paid a living wage as well, because we'll see less and less people wanting to do those jobs and exacerbating the problem even more. So I'm always thinking about systems and how systems design plays into this. And ultimately, right, I'm also getting a text from our listener, D, who's saying, tax the rich. Stop focusing and expecting philanthropy to fill that gap. It's never going to fill that gap. Philanthropic organizations are stretched so thin, especially the ones who are doing really good work. We can give them a lot of money, but ultimately, if we were taxing the rich and making sure that the state was providing these kinds of resources and these kinds of solutions, we wouldn't be in the place that we're at, right?
Absolutely correct. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Barth. Good morning, Barth.
Hello. Hope you can hear me okay.
Yes.
I only caught part of your show so far, but the idea of donating some or all of your kicker to a charitable outlet or institution is a worthwhile idea. But one thing that many people may not know is the things that you donate to can be regulated to some extent. And if you are in contact with an organization or get pitched by an organization, you can ask them some very pertinent questions, which they are obliged by law to answer. Those questions include, how much of my donation, what proportion of my donation goes to overhead or salaries, and how much actually goes the end result. You know, if it's the Wounded Warrior people, for example, a very laudable idea, and unfortunately, the people at the top of that organization were skimming off incredible amounts of money to fund a lavish lifestyle and vehicles and things. So, charitably, it was like 15% of the donations, and I'm not positive about the number, but all of the money that came in the door, if you sent them $100, $15 of that was actually going out the door in some way to directly benefit a wounded warrior. And a lot of organizations that have a big name, unfortunately, still use a lot of money for overhead and a lot of money for executive salaries and whatever. So be sure, be a good consumer. Ask the questions, get the information. If they don't send at least 50% or 60% out the door to the target group, then don't give them your money. Tell your friends not to give them their money. And make a bigger dent in the problem instead of being part of it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for the call. Yeah, that's absolutely true. It really pays to do your research before you make a donation. Because as Barth mentioned, there the world of nonprofits is replete with people running essentially large-scale scams and living very, very lavishly at the top of what's supposed to be a not-for-profit enterprise. For example, I submit Roger Goodell, commissioner of the National Football League, itself a nonprofit organization who brought home $63.9 million last year in salary. It's good to lead a nonprofit, Tracy. It really is.
Oh, my gosh. That is frightening.
And this program has nothing to do with football. I've just always found that appalling, so I took the opportunity to work it in. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Harry. Good morning, Harry.
Oh, greetings, and thank you for taking my call. Yes, I'm going to keep the kicker, and I suggest everyone else do the same. What the reason why it was put in was... they did not want, why it was put in, they didn't want the government to use the money, slush fund or whatever they want, when it's actually your money. But the government over the years has been trying to squash this. Example, years ago I remember getting my kicker's check. It was mailed to you in the mail. Now the kicker amount is used either for a refund or towards your taxes. So they're on the way. They want to get rid of it, but there was enough people there saying that, hey, we'll put it on the ballot measure if you do this. So, yes, I enjoy getting my kicker over all these years, and I remember they used to give you the kicker check in November so you could use it for Christmas. So, so that's all I said. I think the kicker law was a good idea. And like I said, the government's always trying to stop it because it's a huge amount of money. How much is the average person supposed to get back this year? Do you know?
I don't. Do you know the answer, Tracy?
I don't know the answer to that. The total amount is, what did I say, about $4 billion back to the taxpayers.
$4 billion?
Is, you know, yeah, $4 billion back to the taxpayers. So, you know, you have to know how many taxpayers there are. I don't know the actual number. But, you know, it's nothing to you know, sneeze at.
Wow, that didn't realize it was that much money. And there's a lot of people who don't fill out their taxes, so they won't get it, right?
Yep. You have to do your taxes to get it back, yep.
Okay, thank you very much for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for the call, Harry. Here's something to bear in mind as well. We talked about, Harry just asked a very pertinent question, which we do not have the answer to. Maybe we can find it before the end of the program, which is, on average, how much do people get back from the kicker refund? Now, hold that question in mind and consider this. One of the reasons that the revenue forecast has increased to the degree that it has is because receipts from high-income earners were way up this past tax year. Capital gains receipts were up 77%. For tax year 2021. I'm not sure what they were for tax year 2022. I imagine we will find that out. So that means that rich people have been divesting themselves of assets. They've been selling stocks. They've been selling property and so on. So presumably, Tracy, that means the very wealthy Oregonians now are going to get a not insubstantial check or refund or whatever the mechanism is, piece of that money back in their pockets, when arguably they're the ones who should be ponying up to meet the pressing needs that the state sees these days.
Yeah, I mean, just even the idea that, you know, you're getting money back, the thought process, right, that this is something that's coming to you, you know, can be exhilarating. Once again, it's your money. They've just been borrowing it. I've just been sitting on it. This is already your money. You're just getting your own money back. And once again, right, that additional money that the state will have is pretty significant, right? I think, you know, when we think about the fact that this personal tax kicker continues to rise, right, we've got to be also questioning, when is it not going to rise? Because once again, right, there's a long-term outlook for less people to be in the state, and for economic growth to either slow down or turn to recession. So, you know, thinking about all of that, right, what is the value of the kicker? You know, how sustainable is the kicker, especially in those years where there is no revenue overture, but actually, you know, under, you know, we're under revenue. So, I don't know. All the things to think about. Ultimately, right, what I want to see is us do the right thing with the taxpayers' dollars. And I don't know that we're ever going to get there until we, you know, make some significant demands of, you know, the people in the legislature. It seems like, you know, the new governor is going in the right direction. Very interested to see what those detailed plans are for addressing the houselessness crisis in the state. In those, you know, population centers of the state, and is it a one-size-fits-all? Is it a systemic solution? I mean, I have all of the questions, and we will definitely be keeping you in the loop on that.
I would feel, oh, I'm sorry, do we still have caller on the line? No, guess not. Okay. All right, I would feel better about the kicker, Tracy, if I knew that, you know, maybe the state didn't have to give back all the money, that maybe they could keep on hand a reserve to deal with unforeseen circumstances, which seems to happen all the time these days, whether we're talking about environmental disasters like wildfires or other sorts of disasters like, you know, global pandemics. It's not a bad idea for the state to have a little money on reserve to be able to respond to these sorts of things, because I think we can anticipate them happening with more and more frequency. And secondly, I would feel better about the kicker, you know, if I knew that maybe not everybody would get it, right? We just talked about how the revenues from capital gains have been up. Now, I'd feel better about the kicker if people in that upper tax bracket were not going to get money back, right? If they were paid the tax, they paid the taxes they were required by law to pay and that they should pay, and just leave it at that. I would feel better about the kicker, honestly.
Go ahead. Once again, right, when I think about the fiscal conservatives in the state, right, I feel like, you know, the folks that are voting those people in will continue to see this push-pull around what do we spend money on, because those people are never going to want to spend money on a social safety net. No. And so, Oregonians, get yourselves together. Like, why do we keep voting these people in? When we know what we need to do as a state and as a community to take care of the people in most need of care.
Yeah, that's the perpetual problem, though, right? How do we ensure that the people making these decisions are the right sorts of people who are going to make the decisions on behalf of the most vulnerable among us? Philosophers going back to Plato have told us that the people who are best qualified to be leaders are not going to want the job because it's a crappy job. That is a problem, and we have I don't anticipate us figuring that one out anytime soon.
Yep.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. What do you feel about that idea I just tossed out, Tracy? Maybe giving some of the kicker fund back to taxpayers and keeping the rest in reserve as a hedge against unfortunate future development.
Because I'm future nervous, I'm always thinking about the future. I'm always thinking about this recession that we've been being told that isn't coming, but feels like it's might be coming and feels like it's here depending on the week. Right. I'm nervous about that. I'm nervous about population decline and that correlation to, you know, economic stagnation or degrowth, right? Like, what does that look like for a state that has historically underfunded some of the most important social needs of our communities, right? And so it's one of those hard things. Like, we don't know what the future is going to look like, but we have some understanding. And so why wouldn't we be putting money away for that rainy day? We didn't predict, of course, the pandemic. We've had some really crazy weather events, whether that's, you know, 116 degree days in the summer, or, you know, snow right now in almost March, right? Like, we know that the climate is changing, right? And it will continue to change, and that will drive up the likelihood of tragic weather events, right? What do we do as a state to prepare for that, especially knowing that in the future we're just naturally going to have less, you know, reserves on hand, less revenue on hand, and asking the federal government every time and declaring, you know, a state of emergency. I don't know how much that's doing for us as collective people. So it's hard and kind of heavy. And once again, right, also, what are we spending money on with regard to delivering on equity? We know that there's environmental racism. We know that there's whole, you know, systems in the state that aren't serving certain people. We know that there's definitely a equity bent on even the houseless population and certain communities being overrepresented in the housing crisis. Once again, right, where are our priorities as a state? What do we need to invest in, and what do we need to be looking out for the future?
Yeah, I'm really glad you framed it in terms of priorities, because that's really what we're talking about, isn't it, right? This is one of the fundamental questions that people everywhere have to wrestle with. How do we organize ourselves? How do we marshal the collective wealth of our civilization? And how do we put it to best use, right? This is why we institute governments, and this is why we make the decisions that we do. And, you know, I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but we all know as progressives in 21st century America that our system of government, by and large, stopped representing the most vulnerable people a long time ago, and now represents the interests of those who have the most in their pockets already. That is another fundamental problem that we're dealing with, and which is why I would feel a whole lot better about the kicker if it didn't put money back into the pockets of those who already have way, way too much. In fact, Mark just wrote into the program to say, rich people get most of the kicker and most of the money returned to taxpayers for real estate deductions.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely the case. I think we have time for one more call. Let's go to JD. Good morning, JD.
Did you say that was, am I on?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, awesome. I was just going to say, while I like the idea of, I kind of like the idea of the kicker being a being some kind of flat amount, which I think would be the most progressive way to distribute it, because to be honest, I when you said that when I heard people saying that they were going to give it away or spend it on a vacation, I was shocked, because I spent mine as usual on rent and medicine and food, and I'm not sure how many other people are in this position. That said, like, I also think that since this is a refund from a budgetary surplus, that I think it would, while I think we obviously need to spend a lot more money and consideration on social services dealing with the housing crisis and the behavioral health crisis, we need to deliberate on like specific revenue sources for that, and rather than hoping for a windfall year after year. But that said, like, I'm mostly wondering how many people like are in a position in this like catch-22 that I am, where we're relying on that same windfall for basic for like basically to get by. I'll take up like we can take the rest of the discussion out of the area. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much for the call and for raising that important point. What are your thoughts, Tracy?
I feel like I've been kind of saying that a little bit, like at some point we've got to figure out where our priorities are. And I also recognize that for some people that is childcare. That is to make sure that they can pay their rent or make sure that they have a little bit extra in that savings account for when things get dicey, right? When I have to go to the grocery store. And so it's complicated. I think it's complicated. Everyone's going to have a different view on what they would spend their money on and what it should go to or whether it should exist at all. And I will continue saying, if I knew that the state was going to provide the things that I needed to provide for other people, not for myself necessarily, but for the people that I care about and the people who I know need the most support, I would be absolutely fine giving up the kicker. But also, I'm in a different kind of financial situation that allows for that, and I recognize that as well. That's privilege.
And that seems like a good place to leave this conversation. Tracy, have any words of wisdom for us before we sign off?
No, it's almost March, and you know, it's getting close to that like second quarter of the year, and it's feeling really crazy that it's been so cold. Of course, it's going to be cold for the next few days, so my advice is to take care of yourselves and your neighbors. Look out for each other. Let's build community.
You know what? I can't top that, so I won't even try. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This has been Too Much Information with A. Proctor and Tracy Simmons, and we will be back at you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Come together.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume.